This episode of Haunt Heads contains mature subject matter. Listener discretion is advised.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back to another episode of Haunt Heads, the podcast that goes bump in the night. I am your host, Janine Mercer, and I am joined here by
the amazing and impeccably dressed Catherine McCauley.
Indeed. Indeed. Good one.
Yes.
Yeah.
Because I'm wearing my comfy moccasins.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah, the wife has a pair of those that
hers
she likes.
From, are hers also from Target?
No, hers are from a little place up north.
Up north.
Nort. Daredenhay.
Yeah,
I forget the name of the little place, but it's like a tackle shop, and they have, like, random clothing items there. But hers are by a company called Lamo, which I pronounce Lamo, because that's what it looks like. And she doesn't like it, but whatever. I think it's funny.
That's what truly matters. So how are you doing?
I am good. How are you?
I'm doing much better.
Good, good.
Yeah. Yesterday, my body just decided that I needed to sleep for 20 hours. So I went to bed.
That was the thing that
and
happened.
And I just slept. I woke up long enough to drink water and to text my boss that I was not going to be into work.
Cool.
And that I had to take my medication. Mm-hmm. And then I took my medication, and then I just passed the fuck back out.
Hey.
It was beautiful. What,
you know,
I woke up feeling so much better the second time. The first time I woke up, and I felt like death. And then I went back to sleep, because, like, apparently, you know, 15 hours is not sufficient. I needed that extra 5.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I am glad that you're feeling better. And I'm sure that everybody out there in podcast land is happy that you're feeling better. I am also feeling better. I am over the fucking Ebola or whatever the fuck it was that was going around my office. I've beaten that back with a stick. So now I just have, like, the weird, like, the little, you know, like, it's stuck there somewhere, and you didn't, I want to say it's a frog in your throat, but I really don't like frogs, and I don't like that imagery.
It is a raisin in your throat.
It's a raisin in my throat. Uh-huh.
Yes.
Yeah.
Just stuff right there.
That's what it is. To start this week off, I wanted to give a shout out to Susan. Hello, Susan. Thank you so much for your kind post on our Facebook page. We are so very happy that you choose Haunt Heads as your binge-worthy podcast during your long commute to Dallas.
Oh, yes, definitely. Susan, you are awesome.
You rock.
You rule.
You rule. All right. This is the first podcast she's ever listened to.
Aw. I feel so honored.
Yeah. So, and then I thought, well, and then I thought there are so many other podcasts out there that are better than ours.
how did you stumble upon this one?
I wonder.
Huh.
She's just a haunthead. She was looking for something creepy and whatever.
Something that went bump in the night.
There you go. And found us, because we go bump.
We do.
During the day, actually.
True. We're too tired at night to do anything other than, like,
yeah, that's true. That's true.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No. Too much effort.
Every time I have to remember how old I am, I can never remember. I think I'm 38. Yeah, I'm 38. So, yeah, for me, like, 9 o'clock comes, and I'm like, time to go to bed.
So, when you were a kid, did they have color photography?
Oh, God! Boo! Hiss!
Because I printed actually, this out in black and white, hopefully just to, like, make it feel a little bit more, like,
yeah,
fun to
yeah. Yeah, they absolutely did. They had color television. They had something called a Polaroid camera that, you know, the little Polaroid would come out after you snapped a picture, mm-hmm. and then you took it and you shook it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so that it would develop. Yeah,
shake it like a Polaroid picture.
Uh-huh. But it's, have you ever actually shaken it like a Polaroid
yes.
picture? You
I'm
have
a child of the 90s.
You've
I'm not like...
Are you sure?
Yes.
You're not lying?
No.
Okay.
I own Polaroids.
Okay. I'm just checking. You keep telling me I'm old. And then I'm like, oh yeah, well, we had color TV and Polaroid pictures. And you're like, yeah, I had a Polaroid camera, whatever. I have Polaroid pictures. It's like, don't fucking tell me I'm old.
You are, though.
I'm not.
You are.
I'm not.
You're drinking out of a mug that has a pig on it.
You know what? I'm seasoned.
What are you seasoned with? Rosemary? Garlic?
Parsley, sage, rosemary, and thyme.
Ooh.
Yes.
That's a good song.
It is. It is.
Okay.
All right. So another... this is fucking random. So another thing that happened to me this week was I was on my way to the lavatory at work, and it seems as if whenever I go to the bathroom at work, I always have to approach some sort of awkward situation in the hallway. Like, I have to try to get, like, the hallways are not that big.
Mm-hmm.
So I always have to kind of...
Like, scoot around.
Try to scoot around. Yeah, and I don't really like to do that because then I feel like I'm intruding on people's conversations and blah, 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 whatever. So today, on the second floor, there was a lady there with a baby carriage. And everybody was oohing and aahing about the baby and the baby carriage. And I was just trying to get around them.
Mm-hmm.
I was not trying to eye the baby. I had no interest in the baby at all. And suddenly, this woman turns around and she says, "Isn't he cute?" And I looked down and the baby legit looked like Bert from Bert and Ernie. And the only thing that I could think to do was crab walk the fuck out of there silently. So that's what it was. I was like, and
we're walking.
Okay, just bathroom, going to the bathroom, not looking at your baby. Which, you know, I mean, sometimes a baby is cute.
I've seen a cute baby or two in my day.
Dude, this late, oh man, yeah.
Sometimes
yeah.
they're gremlins.
That baby had a unibrow. It had a unibrow, legit.
Well, but would you prefer to, like, wax her tiny baby's brow?
No, like, no. I mean,
think,
I would
don't
never...
Don't think infants require facial grooming.
Well, this baby did. Because he was hairy. He was hairy. She was like, he was born with a full head of hair. And I thought to myself, yeah, and a patch of it above his ass. Like, God. Just hairy. Okay.
I had bright red hair.
But, like...
Like...
All over?
No, I did not have a patch of it.
Because it was like, if Bert was a werewolf, it was this baby. Here. Yeah.
Okay.
So anyway, that's my little something for this week. Do you have anything funny happen to you? I know it's hard to follow.
Oh, yeah. Like with
the Bert gremlin werewolf
with
baby.
Like that. I don't think so. I got bangs. And
you
then,
did.
Then decided that they're not for me and have had them pinned back.
That's
but
okay.
I never would have known had I not done it.
How are you supposed to know if you don't try?
Yeah. And then the girl who did it really messed up. Like, one half of my hair was a lot shorter than the other half of my hair. So I actually had to call a manager person over and be can you fix this? So, like,
oh,
all
dear.
My hair is about an inch shorter than it was originally going to be. But also, in the end, who cares? Hair grows back.
Well, yeah, it does, but that's really unfortunate.
Yeah. And then
I mean,
she was like, you look so nice. And I was like, are we looking at the same person?
Did she say that after she put the weed whacker down? Like, what?
Well, this old guy, like, came up and was just, like, telling me about how he crochets hats for dogs.
Hats for dogs.
He crochets hats for dogs. And he had pictures of his dogs wearing the hats. And, like, so I think she was just, like, kind of, like, trying to be, like, how the fuck do I make this weird old person go away? And then, like, took it out on my hair.
Mm-hmm.
But, hey, man, if you're out there, I really liked your minion hat on your dog.
So, you were wondering how you were going to follow my story, and then you followed it with an old guy crocheting hats for dogs.
Okay. That's what I got.
Fair.
It happened when I was getting bangs.
It's fair.
Like, it was just such a niche market. I was like, you go, sir.
Right. I mean, dogs need hats, too.
Quality.
You know? Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Okay, so.
So, this week, I think we said, I'm going first. Yes. Is that what we said?
Okay. We were, like, laughing our asses off about Mel Gibson.
And that man... was Mel Gibson. See, I still can't get it out without laughing at it. I just don't. It's just because it's Mel Gibson. If it were anybody else. And that man was Leonardo DiCaprio. See, nothing.
Yeah, nothing.
Nothing. And that man. See?
Yeah.
It's Mel Gibson.
It is.
That's absolutely what it is. Okay. So anyway, this week I decided to tackle Chernobyl.
Ooh, fun.
In the vein of me being old, when Chernobyl happened, I was 52. And I remember watching it on the news.
Oh.
And being very afraid because I was 5 and I didn't know what that meant.
Yeah.
I think that the only thing that was as catastrophic as Chernobyl was the Three Mile Island thing that happened. That was the only other, like, nuclear disaster or meltdown that could be comparable.
Yeah.
But not comparable in the way that, oh yeah, these two are similar. Like, somewhat, but Chernobyl was much, much, much worse. So yeah, I decided to tackle that this week, so I'll do a little bit of background on exactly what happened. And then I'm going to tackle the ghosts of Chernobyl. Because a lot of people go in there to take pictures. Ruin porn is alive and well. So people don their suits, their protective gear.
Don the now their gay apparel.
They do. And then they go in there and they basically go through all the old buildings and whatever. And they take pictures and they do podcasts and all that kind of stuff. So, what do you have?
Oh, no, you have to wait.
I have to wait until I'm done?
Yeah.
But... that's a long time.
Yeah.
I mean, they have like 8 pages, dude.
You have to wait. Her name is Walburga. That's what you get.
Like.
Her name is Walburga.
Like Wahlburgers?
Walburgers.
Walburgers.
Walburga.
Walburgers.
Walburga.
Okay, I was going to have a sip of tea, but now I'm laughing and I don't trust myself. Wahlburgers.
And we'll call it a Dolly.
And if I don't decide to call this particular podcast Crab Walk Ugly Baby GTFO, I will call it Wahlburgers. Anyway. All right. So, this is essentially a story about how a failed reactor design and human error led to one of the worst nuclear disasters in history, and a score of countless tales about creepy happenings and paranormal events. The Chernobyl disaster is crazy. I think that a lot of the paranormal stories that come out of there are because of the people who were lost there, and the people who are telling these particular stories are just trying to make some sense out of it. That's really what it seems like. Yeah. I watched a bunch of documentaries that were really interesting. I actually learned a lot about it, a lot that I didn't know. So, yeah.
Okie dokes.
Yeah. I'm aware that many of our listeners might not know what I'm talking about. So in an effort to bring as much enlightenment as possible, I found this article about the disaster. It was truly horrifying, and many lives were lost or affected by the Chernobyl meltdown because not everybody died right away. Some people are still living with, you know, the after effects. Like I said, I was only 5 when it happened, but I remember sitting in front of the television, like, 2 feet away, and my dad yelling at me that I was going to go blind.
Yeah.
Because that's what your parents did back then. And it was probably a thing. You probably could go blind from those TVs back then, but... 1986, the Soviets admit nuclear accident. And this is a news article from the BBC, which, I mean, it's one of the news resources that I trust.
Yeah.
A very few. So I decided on this one. The Soviet Union has acknowledged that there's been an accident at the Chernobyl nuclear power plant in Ukraine. The report from the official news agency, TASS, said that there had been casualties but gave no details of numbers. It said that aid was being sent to the injured. The report said that one of the reactors had been damaged in the accident but gave no further details beyond saying that measures were taken to, quote, eliminate the consequences of the accident.
Yeah, that don't really work.
Radiation. Which was a lie, huge lie. It also claimed that the accident was the first at a Soviet power station.
Also a lie?
It might have been. Okay. I mean, it was the Soviets, so maybe. I mean, yeah. So, the report was the first confirmation of a major nuclear catastrophe since monitoring stations in Sweden, Finland, and Norway began reporting sudden high discharges of radioactivity in the atmosphere 2 days ago. So, this is in April of 1986. The accident is believed to be the most serious in history of nuclear power, worse than that at the Three Mile Island power station in the United States in 1979, when there was some release of radioactivity, but nobody was injured. The Chernobyl nuclear power plant just north of Kiev consists of four reactors known as light water-cooled graphite-moderated reactors. I didn't really get into the science of this because I didn't understand it when I was reading it.
Yeah.
And I was like, I don't know how many rocket scientists we have listening to this podcast, but maybe half of one. So, and, you know, he's...
0.5 rockets.
Right, yeah.
So his name was Mel Gibson.
Yes, exactly. Apparently, these graphite-moderated reactors, that type was hardly used outside of the Soviet Union, so they made it sound like it was kind of not high-tech. You know, it was like, okay, this is what they have in the Soviet Union.
Oh, it's like a generic, it's a generic radioactive containment center.
What was the, okay, so that reminds me of GLOW, because I was reminded of when, what is her name? Shit, I'm not going to remember any of the fucking names of the characters now, because I watched it so long ago.
And I haven't seen GLOW, so.
Oh, you've never seen it? It's really funny. Yeah, it's really funny. But... Okay, so one of the characters decides that the wrestling character that she's going to settle on is this Russian who is, like very thick accent, whatever. Mm. And they go to this store to do a grand opening. And so she puts on this whole performance, and she talks about how in Soviet Union, we have one chair. And... What is it? It takes 1 year to sit in this, to get your chance to sit in this chair. And if you miss your chance, you stand for a whole year. So anyway, that's probably not exactly right, but it was funny and it reminded me. The number of casualties both immediately and in the future from radiation sickness is expected to be high, although the exact number may never be known. It is not believed, however, that there is any risk to the health of anyone outside the Soviet Union. The discharge of radioactivity was so great that by the time the fallout reached Sweden, 1,000 miles away, it was still powerful enough to register twice the natural level of radioactivity in the atmosphere.
Hot shit.
Yeah, craziness. The sudden jump in radioactivity levels was enough to prompt a full-scale alert in Sweden, which initially believed that the accident had happened at its own nuclear power plant.
Oh, shit.
On the Baltic coast. So they evacuated 600 workers.
Freaking the fuck out.
Before they realized...
Oh, it's not us.
Wait, this is not us. What the fuck is happening?
I bet you if it had gotten that bad, people would not have admitted that they did anything.
Probably not. They would have been like, what? No, Sweden. That's Sweden's fault.
Yeah.
Yeah. So here are the facts.
Okay.
Chernobyl remains the world's worst civil nuclear disaster. It emerged that design flaws had led to a power surge causing massive explosions, which blew the top off the reactor. Which is not a thing that you want to happen to your reactor.
No. Top main firmly on.
Yes, yeah, you want the cap. You want the cap on.
It's not soda.
No. It is not. Estimates of the numbers affected vary tremendously. A report in 2005 by the Chernobyl Forum, set up by a number of bodies, including the World Health Organization and the UN and governments of Belarus, the Russian Federation, and Ukraine, concluded that fewer than 50 people, most of them workers at the plant, died as a result of the exposure. Most of them died immediately, but some survived until as late as 2004. The forum estimates that up to 9,000 people could eventually die from radiation exposure, although Greenpeace claims that the figure could be much higher, up to 93,000.
That's so sad.
The contamination spread across neighboring Belarus and into Europe. In North Wales, sheep on some 350 farms still have to be tested for radiation before their meat can be eaten. Damn. So this was, I mean, just to put things in perspective, this was a major disaster.
Yeah, long-lasting repercussions.
Yeah. A concrete sarcophagus was hastily built to cover the damaged reactor, but it's weakening over time. It was due to be replaced in 2007, so they did that. Chernobyl continued to produce electricity for another 14 years until international pressure forced its closure in 2000. An official exclusion zone around the plant remains in place, extending for 30 kilometers or 18 miles, and it is one of the most radioactive spots on Earth, and will probably continue to be that way
for
the foreseeable future. Yeah, and probably beyond that. The village of Pripyat in the Ukraine is now a ghost town flooded with varying degrees of toxic radiation, but it was founded in February of 1970 as a nuclear city. There were a lot of these cities created. Nuclear cities were essentially situated around power plants.
Mm-hmm.
And
for the workers.
So those workers would live and work within the area of the power plant. It was essentially a closed city. If you didn't work at the power plant, you couldn't live there. It was officially proclaimed a city in 1979, and that population was estimated to be almost 50,000 people.
Damn.
Yeah, it was pretty big. It was a big place. In April of 1986, the residents of Pripyat were told to board buses leaving the affected area around the plant, but were not told when or if they would be returning. Residents were told to leave on all non-essential items and to board quickly. As the buses filled, musical and acting troupes performed to distract the residents from what was actually happening. So the government actually got performers to come in and perform to distract the people from this nuclear meltdown that could potentially kill them all.
I'm trying to decide if I think that's a
to get them on the buses
or a negative.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
I can imagine if, like, they had families and children.
Right.
That might be a good thing, but also just tell me what the fuck is going on and don't be like, hey, look, there's a trombone!
Well, you know, and Soviet Russia wasn't exactly like, okay, if everybody will come over here and take a seat because there's only one fucking chair. They're like, if everybody would come over here, we'll tell you exactly what's going on. Nobody panic. For your own benefit, we're just going to evacuate you. So please do so. No, like, no. It was like, look over here. It's a clown. Like, no, there was no, this is what's happening.
Not, the thing is, this is such a, like, a serious topic. I don't want to be laughing too much.
And I mean, at that point, it was probably a clown that glows in the dark. Because it's fucking, I mean, it's a nuclear reactor that's melted down. Like, it was insane. Okay, so they're told to board these buses. The musicians are playing. The military presence instructed the performers that they were not to speak to anybody at all, only to entertain, so they were not to reveal anything that they had heard on any news outlets or anything. So they were only there to entertain. They danced and sang for the people. One musician who was present reported that a ballerina twirling for onlookers was slowly losing her hair. Blood actually began to run from her ears and nose from the exposure. Yeah.
I don't like that.
Yeah. Children would run to her and give her flowers, and those children were also beginning to lose their teeth and their hair from exposure. At one point, he says that a generator stalled, and for just a moment, he could see the forms of the children and the flowers that they were offering glowing in the dark. So, it was pretty crazy. By the time government authorities and officials publicly recognized what had happened, most of the residents of Pripyat had been exposed for 36 hours or more. So they literally just left them there. And then all of a sudden we're like, you know what? Yeah, the shit is really hitting the fan here. This is getting bad. We should probably get these people out of here.
Yeah, but
36 hours after it happened. Yeah, yeah. The residents of Pripyat would never return to their homes. As a result, Pripyat retains this otherworldly feeling, almost as if you're not alone. Books that the children were reading in school are just left open on the desks. Dolls are arranged for tea parties, never to be continued. Dishes remain in cupboards. Television sets sit silent and unobserved in fully arranged living rooms. Of course, Pripyat is not a place for the living. And it's no wonder that so many ghostly tales permeate this part of the world.
Mm-hmm.
So from here, I'd like to transition into some of the ghostly sightings in and around Chernobyl. Many stories have circulated about the villages surrounding the now-shuttered power plant, and it's no surprise to me that ghost stories have risen out of the ashes of the Chernobyl disaster. Andrei Kursukov, a nuclear physicist from New York, said that he went to the power station at Chernobyl in 1997 at around 7:30 in the morning. He went to Reactor 4, which is the location where the explosion occurred
mm-hmm.
in 1986. He was taking radiation readings of the site with a Geiger counter, and he heard someone screaming from inside Reactor 4. This person apparently said there was a fire, they needed somebody to help them. He could clearly hear this. He says, I ran upstairs to tell someone, but they said that when I entered the reactor control room, I was the first person to open that door in 3 years.
What the fuck?
And the only way to get inside the old reactor is through the doors that I came through.
What the fuck?
So if someone had gone inside the reactor when I wasn't looking, they would have tripped an alarm that goes off when the reactor door is opened mechanically. So,
damn.
And this reactor door apparently requires a password and a handprint. Yet something or someone was inside. Later that evening, as they were eating dinner outside the building by the river next to the plant, a floodlight turned on in the room of the installation. There was no way anyone could be inside because, again, door, handprint, passcode. He says, as we ate, we figured that there was a power surge or something, and then just as his colleague says this, the light goes off. So. Some survivors of the Chernobyl disaster recall seeing a large winged creature with glowing red eyes in early April, shortly before the meltdown. It was known as the Black Bird of Chernobyl, and apparently the creature has been compared to America's Mothman.
Ooh.
So there's a little bit of a cryptozoological link here. You might have heard stories about the huge winged creature with glowing eyes being seen in Point Pleasant, West Virginia, shortly before the Silver Bridge collapse. I also did a piece for that for Hauntheads. So, 46 people died, and witnesses reported seeing a large black winged figure just prior to the bridge fail. Survivors of Chernobyl said that they saw the creature flying away from Reactor 4 and that reports of the bird ceased after the meltdown.
Its job there was done.
Its job was done, and it was like, peace out, bitches. Some people claimed that this creature that they were seeing was not a creature at all, but, and you'll like this, an alien spacecraft.
Yes!
Whose inhabitants had helped to limit the scope of the disaster.
I agree. That's what it was.
Aliens.
Aliens.
With the hair and the hands. Aliens.
Aliens.
Yes. It's believed by many that this creature is a harbinger of death and destruction, while others say it was just a black stork.
It was aliens.
I feel like I'm on the stork train.
Nope. It was aliens.
Was always alien?
Yeah. And one of them was Mel Gibson.
Mel Gibson. And that alien
was Mel Gibson.
Yes. I feel like this is going to be a running joke now. In Kopachi, I don't know if I'm pronouncing that right, but that's what it looks like.
I mean, I never pronounce anything right, so you're beating me.
I mean, that's what it looks like. a small village roughly 4.5 miles southwest of the plant. There is only one building standing.
I just
the element.
Teabag in the nose.
Oh, no. You got teabagged? I mean...
the bag of tea that I have in my cup.
Oh, okay.
Just hit me in the nose.
Okay, I was gonna say, because that means something else,
yeah,
too.
I didn't think of that until after that.
And I'm sitting over here and also don't have the hardware
yeah.
to do that. So, let's try that again. In Kopachi, a small village roughly 4.5 miles southwest of the plant, there's only one building standing, the elementary school. Kopachi is a popular spot for photographers and explorers who wander the old school looking for the perfect shot or a paranormal happening. Many explorers have reported seeing small children ducking around corners in their periphery, and then when they turn to see, the shadows are gone. Obviously, a place like an abandoned elementary school is going to be creepy, particularly one that was evacuated due to a nuclear meltdown.
Yeah.
But there is... I mean, there is a sense of unease and sadness in
yeah.
that place.
Innocence lost.
Yeah, yeah. Children's voices have been heard calling down the dark corridors, and objects sometimes move on their own. this is something that has been circulating on the internet for a while, and I'm just going to put it out there, and then I'm going to walk away.
Okay.
So, there have also been tales of flesh-eating zombies roaming the abandoned woodlands and buildings, eating any tourists or researchers who happen to wander into the exclusion zone. A grainy video is evidence, quote-unquote, of a zombie tearing a man limb from limb, but it's actually from a video game released in 2000 called Stalker Shadow of Chernobyl. No zombies.
No zombies.
There's no. Mm-mm. The video was uploaded to YouTube as proof of the existence of zombie-like creatures. But it's absolutely not a thing. It's not real. Now,
first of all, if it was real, there's no way the government would let that video be a video that exists.
Well, and I mean, I feel like if there were zombies... that the government would have found a way to put them to use.
Oh, yeah. There's multiple,
you know,
reasons as to why...
Like that movie Fido? Have you ever seen that movie?
No.
It's where there are zombies, but they have shock collars. So they have them do, like, random things around the house and shit. Like, they make them do chores, they make them do farm work.
Ah.
And if they get out of hand, they shock them. Yeah.
And then they feed them brains?
Good movie. I don't know. I feel like they feed them cattle or something. I don't know.
Okay.
I feel like
there's some ethical implications.
Well, I mean, they're zombies, right? So technically, I mean, when you become a zombie,
no, I mean,
the
that's
theory
ethical
is...
implications to killing people and giving their brains to, like, your...
Oh, yes, that.
Yeah.
That part of it.
Yeah.
We weren't on the same page. Now we're on the same page.
I mean, there's ethical implications on both sides of the equation, but... I meant more so the securing of brains for your zombie
Right, you weren't necessarily talking about the ethical treatment of zombies. You were talking about the ethical treatment of human beings as food for zombies.
Yeah, ethical
yes.
consumption of human
mm-hmm.
biomatter.
Yes, 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 yes. That makes sense. There's a great segment on a show called Destination Truth. I don't know if you've ever seen that show.
Nope.
But it has a host, Josh Gates.
A host with the most?
A host with the most. He and his team go to Pripyat, and they stay the night. And when I say stay the night, they stay for as long as they can. And then they leave, because you can't stay there for that long, especially not a whole night.
Yeah. Well, I was thinking about that when you said, like, the people fucking eating lunch. I was like, how is that, like,
yeah.
safe?
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, it makes you wonder.
No wonder you were seeing lights go on and off during fucking, like, Chernobyl.
Right.
Like,
by Chernobyl. By a river.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I don't know. On the bright side, it was dark outside, but they could see where their lunches were. Yeah. So good. I mean, it's like, where's my fucking ham sandwich? Oh, it's right there. It's glowing green. Good. Yeah. Good. There it is.
I know.
All right. Yeah. Found it. Found it.
No worries here.
Drop my bottle cap. Oh, never mind. Found it. Do, do, do. They go into Pripyat. They do an investigation. Some people have said that there are ghostly figures roaming the area. Reportedly, these figures resemble people who have passed away due to the disaster. He interviews a couple of people who have had experiences in the long-abandoned Pripyat. One woman who was a fourth grader at the time of the disaster, she says that the ghosts that she's seen on her many trips to Pripyat over the years are unformed and resemble just balls of energy.
But if it's a ball of energy, how do you know it's a ghost?
Well, I mean, if you see just a random ball of energy floating around, then you're probably not going to be like, that's a logical thing that will... I mean, when was the last time you just saw a random ball of energy just floating around?
I mean...
Just hanging out.
I see weird shit all the time.
I suppose. I mean, I do sometimes too, but, like...
Yeah. I don't know. I just feel like I would think more that it was, like, a being as opposed to, like, a ghost.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know. I don't know what her take... And, actually, it was really weird. The guy who was, like, taking them on the tour or whatever of Pripyat, these people that he was interviewing, they couldn't speak any English. So this guy who was with them was translating. Hmm. And when the people started talking about ghosts, he refused to translate.
Ooh. Intrigue.
So, yeah. Well, and, you know, I mean, I'm sure that there are people... probably in that part of the world that are still, like, loyal to whatever regime was on the go. Yeah. You know, I mean, there are people here who are still loyal to the Bushes and whatever. But I know.
Sorry, I'm back.
I know. I know how it is. But yeah, I mean, it's just one of those things, you know, like, maybe he has some preconceived notions about that.
Yeah.
Based on what happened there, or maybe he just didn't want to translate because he was like, this is bullshit, I'm not translating it.
Yeah, it's like, you didn't pay me enough to talk about this shit.
Right, like, this is not real, this is bullshit, I'm not translating.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah.
But it was kind of, it almost exactly mirrored the, you know, the people who are boarding the buses,
mm-hmm.
and they're not being told yeah. anything. You know, there's no translation there. Of what's happening. And
cinematic parallel.
This guy, yeah. And so this guy is like, no, I'm not going to translate. Anyway. But one of the people who was traveling with them could speak Russian. So he translated for them. Mm-hmm. This fourth grader who was there at the time of the disaster.
First I thought they were going to say a fourth grader went on a tour. And I'm like, you're fucking exposing a tiny child radiation? I was about to, like, get pissed.
No.
Okay.
No. She was a fourth grader at the time. She says that the ghosts that she's seen, again, they resemble this just faceless balls of energy. The second witness claimed to have seen something similar in an abandoned hospital. So during their investigation, Josh and his team experienced their thermal imaging equipment shutting down inexplicably. They also witness a thermal signature that resembles a human figure. So they do have some interesting experiences. It's possible that the images that they caught were just reflections of other explorers just wandering the ruins. It's not that nobody else could ever get in there.
Mm-hmm.
There are checkpoints, but it's literally just like three guys at a checkpoint.
Yeah, and so they're not like...
They're not like patrolling a perimeter.
Yeah.
They're just like, this is a road. There is a small building on this road that we will stand around and smoke. And then as you're going through, they stop and they check your vehicle.
3 weeks.
Oh, yeah. You're doing well.
Don't talk about smoking. I'm in a delicate stage.
I think you're doing well.
I am, but anyway. Just now.
I would recommend that if you want to check out their, you know, walkthrough of the buildings at Chernobyl, I'm going to post this on the blog. There'll be an active link there that you can go on and watch that particular episode. It's only half of the episode that they dedicate to Chernobyl, so it's kind of short, but mm-hmm. it was still pretty interesting. What do you guys think? Is Pripyat a ghost town filled with actual ghosts? We might never know for sure, but there's definitely been a lot of evidence captured that supports this idea. To clue up, I don't want you guys to think that every village surrounding Chernobyl is a ghost town. In fact, the town of Chernobyl, which is just over 10 kilometers from the reactor, has residents that cycle in and out at regular intervals, and currently nearly 5 million people live in areas that are still considered contaminated. In addition, 180 elderly individuals have returned to their homes in the exclusion zone, and they refuse to leave. If you'd like more information about them, there's an awesome documentary called The Babushka of Chernobyl. Babushka is a term meaning grandmother. It could take another 100 years for the areas affected by the meltdown to be inhabitable. But like I said, to begin with, there's nothing to compare this to. Because nothing of this magnitude, has ever happened. I mean, it could take thousands of years for the area around the reactor to be inhabitable again. But we have no way of knowing. So, I guess we just have to wait and see. Yeah. So that was the ghost of Chernobyl.
Are you ready for Wahlberga?
Are you ready for this? For Wahlburgers.
Is that a restaurant of which I don't know the name?
You know the Wahlbergs? One of their brothers is an actor. One of his brothers is a restaurateur and has a restaurant called Wahlburgers, and I think it's a chain. I think there's a few of them.
Interesting.
It's Wahlburgers. There was a reality TV show based around it.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Okay.
I'm ready.
You're ready for the phantom?
I'm ready for this.
In the house of Oesterreich?
Let's go.
So picture this.
Sicily, 1932.
You are Fred, right? Your name is Fred. Are you picturing this? It's important that you picture this.
I mean, what does Fred look like?
Wait, I have pictures.
It might help me to picture Fred if I had a picture of Fred.
This is Fred.
Oh, that's Fred. Okay.
So you're Fred.
Yeah. So he kind of looks like a furniture salesman with, like, a really awesome comb-over.
Fred actually was a wealthy owner of an apron factory.
Oh.
You're Fred. You're coming home from a long day's work.
Yes.
Drunk, because you're an asshole.
Okay. Do I have to be Fred? I mean...
Yes. You don't have a choice.
Okay.
And you've been noticing lately that there are strange noises, like... all over in your house. Like you're laying down to sleep and it sounds as though someone is walking in the hall. And you'll put down a drink or something and leave the room and come back and it will have moved. Ooh. So, eventually, after time, you probably would think, A, I'm fucking nuts, or B, my house is haunted.
Or C, I should probably cut down on how much I'm drinking because obviously something's up. Okay.
So, then what you do is you talk to your wife. And you're like, wifey dear, I think our house might be haunted.
I don't think that's what he'd say.
You're right.
He's an asshole. Yeah.
Bitch, our house is haunted.
Pass me the Jim Beam.
Yeah. And then you might, for example, move from your house in Milwaukee to one in Los Angeles. Only for the same shit to keep on happening.
Oh.
Then, I personally, if I was Fred, which I'm glad I'm not, because he's an asshole.
Right.
I would think that I was personally haunted. But you'd be wrong. Do you know why? Because it's not a fucking phantom ghost. It's your wife's fucking lover that lives in your attic.
What? Are you shitting me?
Oh, sorry, Ken, her attic lover.
Wow. Okay. Well, I mean, I guess if you're going to take a lover, hiding them in the attic would probably be pretty convenient.
So Wahlberga was known as Dolly, and she was born in Germany in the 1890s.
That's better than Wahlburgers.
Yeah. She moved as a young woman to Wisconsin, and life was pretty tough for her until she married Fred Osterreich. And he was born on December 8th, 1877. And like I said, he was the wealthy owner of an apron factory in Milwaukee.
Like aprons.
Yes, like creating of aprons.
Wow.
For people to wear. So like sewing and all that jazz. Yes.
No wonder he drank.
He was a very serious man who worked hard and drank harder. He spent most of his time at the bar with his friends than he did at home.
Mm.
So Dolly, which is what Walburga went by.
Right.
honestly, didn't have that fun of a life, because she, like, grew up really, really poor in Germany, then moved to Wisconsin, lived on a farm, married this, like, rich dude, and then he's just a fucking asshole who drinks all the time and has gone off partying with his friends.
Right.
But not everything was okay with Dolly. Dolly was a little weird. So.
Oh, good weird?
No.
Oh.
No, she was weird.
Oh.
She fucking kept a lover in her attic. I don't think that can be good weird.
Well, but I mean, did she... I mean, I guess we're going to figure this out later on in the story, but, I mean, she keep him chained to the bed? Because if he was there of his own free will, that's not... I mean, if he was like, yeah, Dolly, I'll be right here when you're ready for another rolling the hay.
Okay.
I mean...
So, basically... The whole everything started in the autumn of 1913, when Dolly called her husband at the apron factory, saying that her sewing machine was not working.
And he would be the one to call, him being an apron maker and using the sewing machine all the time.
So her husband sent Otto, who was one of the workers at his factory, to fix it. And he was 17 at the time. So she's 26 and he's 17. And mind you, this is the early 1900s, so it's not as hinky as that feels right now.
Right.
Because that feels kind of hinky to me.
Yeah.
Anyhow.
I mean, I just hope that she had her ankles covered, because...
Oh!
How risque would that be?
She actually had noticed Otto at the factory earlier, so when she knew that it was him, she greeted him in a silk robe, stockings, heavy perfume, and nothing else.
Oh.
And that was the start of their decade-long affair.
I mean, I'm sorry. This has been coming for a little bit now, but... Hello, Dolly! Whew. All right.
Okay. So, in the beginning, they...
I've been holding it in. I've been saving that one until just then.
That was good. I'm going to try and drink without getting teabagged.
It worked. It worked well. That worked well.
So the two began having their illicit love affair, as people do, meeting at hotel rooms and Otto coming by the house.
Mm-hmm.
But her neighbors were real fucking nosy, and they started noticing that this young man was always coming around when, like, her husband wasn't around. And they were like, hey, and she's like, oh, yeah, that's my brother. He's just a little bit of a wanderer. He just stops by now and again. So then, logically, Dolly came up with a plan. She convinced Otto to quit his job at the apron factory and move into her attic.
I mean, and done.
You get the good loving anytime. And
it is more convenient.
She set up a bed and a desk, and he moved in. And for the next 5 years, he spoke to no one but Dolly. For five years. Once Fred left for work, Otto would come down and help Dolly with her chores and pleasure her in the bedroom, and he would make bathtub gin.
Oh.
So I think he was kind of like living the high life.
It sounds like it.
And then when Fred would come home in the evenings, Otto would spend his time reading novels that Dolly had checked out for him and writing stories for pulp magazines. Actually, some of his stories were published under the pen name of Walter Klein.
Oh.
So, that does exist.
I'll have to look that up.
Yeah.
Hmm.
I was going to, and then I didn't.
Well, I mean, but our listeners can look it up, and we can look
it up. Well, I saw, like, the cover of, like, one of the magazines, and it said Walter Klein on it, so I was like, okay, that seems to hold enough merit for me to continue onward. Also, like, there was articles I got from, like, the LA Times and stuff like that.
Oh, sure.
I got most of it, honestly, from a site called I Can't Believe It's Nonfiction. Which I think fits
with the theme. Yeah.
So, yeah. Then, of course,
Fred would, like, ask Dolly about the noises that he heard and, like, how he was seeing shadows moving in, like, the upstairs windows and how he would set things down and then, like, they would, like, suddenly move.
Oh.
And he started to believe that either their house is haunted or that he was going crazy, so he decided to move from Milwaukee to Los Angeles.
Hmm.
And Dolly was cool with this. Her only request was that the new house has an attic.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, like, I don't know. I wouldn't think that was that weird of my spouse if they're like, hey, when we move, can I make sure we have an attic?
I mean, extra storage.
Yeah. Whatevs.
For your lover.
Yes. So.
Or your hat boxes. Whatever floats your boat.
For your Otto and his bathtub of gin.
Right.
So.
Wait. So what? Where was he making the gin? Was he making it in the bathroom or was he making it in a bathtub in the attic?
It was a bathtub in the attic.
Oh, in the attic. Wow. Okay.
I feel like gin must be like an involved process that takes a
time. I mean, I don't know anything about it. I don't know, but
like four different sources said that he made bathtub gin. So I was like, apparently this is an important aspect of the story,
okay.
And I will include it.
All right.
Fair. So, she was like, "Yeah, babe, we can move just as long as I have a house with an attic." So Dolly gave Otto the money she had gotten from selling his stories and sent him by train to L.A. So he worked as a janitor and lived in an apartment while he waited for Dolly. And then when Dolly and Fred moved in, he moved in to the new attic.
Right.
Yes.
Hmm.
At night, he read mysteries by candlelight and wrote stories of adventure and lust. By day, he made love to Dolly, helped her keep house, and made, again, bathtub gin.
Right.
So now Fred is honestly... Like, I kind of feel bad for him, because he must be thinking he's just completely lost it, or he's personally haunted, because this shit's still going on. Like,
something.
He moved across the goddamn country. Like, that's not just, like, a short little, like, journey. You're going from fucking, like, Wisconsin to California.
Mm-hmm.
So, yes, he purchased a new factory, and life continued as usual, until August 22nd of 1922. Dolly and Fred went to a party that evening, but got into an argument and left early. The two returned home, still fighting. Now I'm going to read to you a bit from this lovely article I found by Don, really fun last name that I'm trying to pronounce, Nakadike.
Oh, okay.
Nakaid. Anyways, called The Phantom in the House of Osirai.
Uh-huh.
Are you ready for this?
I am.
This will set the tone for you for the evening.
Okay.
Everything went to shit. Shortly before midnight, on August 22nd, 1922, a crash and the tinkle of broken glass on the hardwood floor aroused Mrs. C.A. Norton from a sound slumber in her home on fashionable North St. Andrews Boulevard, Los Angeles.
Oh, well, fiddle-dee-dee.
Yes. Bewildered, she sprang up and groped through the darkness toward the open window, not certain in her own mind whether the noise had come from within or without.
I mean, I feel like she's probably, like, this breathy, like...
Yeah, like, big bosomed.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Then came the sharp bark of an automatic pistol, followed by the piercing scream of a woman in the mansion occupied next door by Frank Osterreich, the millionaire garment manufacturer. Mrs. Rawson, who resided with Mrs. Norton, maybe they were lovers.
Oh, maybe.
Came running into the
Maybe she lived in the attic.
Seems to be the trend.
When in Rome. Or in California.
Well, I actually, like, the viewers can't see, but they actually put out the sketch of, like, that, like, his
trunk
room,
yeah,
and then all,
that.
Yeah. So.
Oh, that's cool.
That must be a sad life.
I'll have to post a link to that.
Oh, yeah, I'll send you one. I don't know if it's in the thing, but I have it on my computer.
Okay.
Okay. A shadow passed swiftly and silently before the curtains of the Osterreich parlor. The shades were only halfway down, and the terror-stricken witnesses could see a man's legs and feet as he ran furiously towards the front of the mansion. Bang! Bang! Again the bark of the automatic, this time twice in such quick succession that the report seemed almost blurred into one. More screams!
Oh, dear.
Then, silence. Mrs. Rawson grabbed the telephone and called the Osterreich home. Her and Mrs. Norton could hear the wild jangling of the bell in the neighboring residence, but there was no answer. Quickly donning clothing, the two stepped outside. Murder!
Other neighbors had heard the shots and screams. But without waiting for the arrival of the officers, after J.W. Ashley telephoned the police, a dozen or more burst into the home. Sprawled on the floor lay the body of Mr. Osreich. Blood was welling from a ghastly bullet hole in the temple and two more just above the heart. Rugs were kicked up and twisted, indicating a terrific struggle had taken place.
That escalated quickly.
The neighbors paused but a moment to glimpse the tragic sight. The hysterical cries of a woman, interspersed by resounding thumps on a door, caused them to fly upstairs. More cries and more blows on a door drew them to a closet in a bedroom. They endeavored to open the door. It was locked. One of the men seized a chair in desperation and was about to batter in the unyielding door when someone picked up a key from the hall a few feet from the closet. A moment later, pale as death, Mrs. Osreich staggered from her place of imprisonment. So, and it continues, and honestly, it is a riveting read. It's, I do not, for the life of me, I should be able to recall the name of the magazine, but I don't. But they took real events, and like they wrote them like the sensational thing, because obviously it was the 1920s, so people didn't have a lot in the way of entertainment.
Right, yeah.
Anyhow, so, like it says in there, on August 22nd, 1922, Dolly and Fred went to a party and then came home. When they returned home, they were fighting, and Otto was up in his attic room, and he was starting to be actually really worried for Dolly's safety because the fight kept escalating. Suspecting that Fred might get violent, Otto came down with two 25 caliber revolvers and shot Fred 3 times.
Two? Jesus.
Yeah.
I mean, I guess go balls to the wall or don't go at all, but holy shit.
Yeah, well, you gotta imagine at this point, he's, like, been up in that fucking attic room just drinking gin for a while now.
I mean, this is true.
But Dolly realized that they had to act really fast, so she had Otto secure her in the closet and lock the door from the outside. He then took Fred's diamond watch and the guns and returned to his hidden attic room. So that way, when the police got there, it looked as though she could not have been involved because she was locked in a door that was, like, locked from the outside.
Yep.
And when they searched the premises, they did not find the attic room and Otto.
Hmm.
So even though the police were like, okay, sure.
Right?
Right. There wasn't much that they could do about the situation. And then poor Fred was dead. And Dolly inherited her husband's small fortune, sold the house, and bought a new one. And her and Otto were now free to live a normal life. But instead, they chose to continue on as before. Dolly living in the house and Otto taking up residence in the new attic.
Oh.
See, part of me, though, I actually feel really bad for Otto because he stumbled into this when he was 17 years old. You know what I mean? You're like a kid.
Yeah, that's a pretty complicated situation to be
trapped
in. And I mean, I applaud his gin-making skills, because apparently they were quite impressive, but, I mean, I can't, like, nobody else to talk to but that one person, and then that one person just wants sexual pleasure from you, and then, okay, go back to your attic room, like,
Yeah, wow. I would also wander the halls when the man was asleep, just trying to fucking, like, not I would totally be the type of person that would fuck with him, like, come down and, like, move, like, his shit around. Like, that would bring me so much joy. If I was stuck living in someone's attic. I'm like, oh, yeah, well, you're gonna come in your whiskeys and gonna be over here, it's gonna be over on there.
Right.
And, like, I'm sure, like, he heard their conversations where the guy was like, we're totally haunted.
Right.
And, like, I wonder what Dolly thought in those moments. Just like, yeah, it's a ghost.
Ghosts. Yep.
Yes. However, Dolly hired a lawyer to manage her dead husband's estate, Herman Shapiro, and they became lovers. So now she's, like, lovers with Otto and lovers with this Herman dude. And after they dated for a little bit, Dolly gave Herman the watch that supposedly had been stolen during the murder.
Oh.
So Herman was like, wait a second.
Yep.
This was supposedly, like, the reason that your husband was killed. And Dolly said that she had found it in the couch cushions, but didn't think it was important enough to notify the police. Herman was kind of like, okay, sure. And just went with it for the time being.
So do they know?
No!
They don't know about each other.
Then wait! Then, during the time that Dolly was in a relationship with Herman and Otto, she took a third lover!
Oh my god!
She had a high libido!
Wow!
Uriklum.
She likes the whoopee.
Yeah, and shortly after giving Herman the watch, she gave Roy one of the revolvers used in the murder. She asked him to dispose of the weapon, saying she was afraid police might mistake it for one used in her husband's murder and accuse her. And then Roy, like, with that pussy magic in the air, just believed her and went and threw the gun into a tar pit. So Dolly told the same story to a neighbor who buried the second revolver in his garden. So then, her with her three lovers, eventually she's like, oof, I'm just having sex too much. Gotta back it up a little bit, go back down to two. So she breaks things off with Roy. In revenge, he goes to the police and tells them about the gun. And Dolly is arrested. With no one to care for Otto, Dolly finally has to let Herman know, BT Dubs, there's a man living in my attic, because she's arrested, so she can't feed him.
Oh, God! So,
she told him to take food to her vagabond half-brother to knock three times on the ceiling in the bedroom closet and give, like, food to the man who lived there.
Okay, but wait, so how is Otto moving the things around in the house if he's locked in the attic?
I don't know.
Because he's locked, like, he can't get out. He has no food, he's going to starve to death. He can't get out.
Maybe he just isn't able to, like, prepare food for himself because he's been living in an attic for 10 years.
I don't know. I mean,
there might be a flaw in the story.
I mean, perhaps, you know, he's 17 years old. He doesn't ever learn to make his own food.
Also, she could
he could just be like, you know what? I'm going to make myself a bag of microwave popcorn.
Oh, also, he probably has been trained that he's not supposed to leave the house, like, during the day. So then, like, if she's just not there, she's not there for a whole day and he's just not eating, he's probably getting stressed out. Like, so it might not even be that, like,
He can't get out.
He's just trained, to
wow,
not do it.
Okay.
I don't know. I am not weird. Herman or Otto, so
I am apparently supposed to be Fred, but I'm dead, so...
Yes, you've died now.
I died a while ago, so yeah. It doesn't matter.
Three shots with two revolvers.
Uh-huh, right.
So Otto came down and immediately told Herman every detail of his now 20-year-long affair with Dolly.
Wow.
So Herman told him to get the fuck out and never come back.
He's like, bro, leave.
So, Otto actually remained at large for 8 years. He moved to Canada, changed his name to Walter Klein, and married another woman before then returning to Los Angeles. So, Otto was in the wind, the police still couldn't explain how Dolly could have shot Fred from inside the closet. And at this point, only her and Herman knew about Otto.
Now, you would think that being in the wind would be better than being in the attic.
You would. But, yeah, so they had to let Dolly go. Because they, she clearly got rid of these guns.
Right.
That's suspicious. Yeah. Mm-hmm. But, like, they had nothing else to go on. And for some reason, Herman, like, was sticking with her. And just, like, letting the Otto thing go on.
Right.
However, then, in 1930, Herman went to police and he told them about the watch and what Otto had told him.
Oh.
So, they arrested Dolly again, and since Otto had just returned from Canada, I'm guessing, my personal opinion is that Herman saw Otto around, was like, you ain't getting with my lady, and then, like, went off, but that is Katie's personal thoughts. But yeah, so they arrested Dolly again, and then they arrested Otto. And the neighbor that had buried the gun in his rose garden saw Dolly in the news and handed it over to police.
Huh.
So now all her lies are, like, starting to just come in.
Yeah.
However, when Otto went on trial, he was found guilty of manslaughter, but the statute of limitations for the crime had expired a year before the trial, and the court had no choice but to set him free.
Huh.
So he changed his name and left Los Angeles.
Wow.
And people don't really know much of what happened then.
Crazy.
The rest of his life.
Huh.
The sad thing is, it started out early on in the trial. Otto was saying that, like, he did everything, like, for the love of Dolly, but then it changed where he said that she kind of kept him as a slave and he didn't feel like he was allowed to leave.
Right.
Which, that would make more sense to me, personally.
Yeah.
But Dolly went on trial next, but the jurors could not agree, and it ended in a hung jury.
Hmm.
And it was left open for several years, but eventually they decided not to try the case again. So she began a relationship with Ray Hedrick, and now this time, one man.
Mm-hmm.
And they dated for 30 years and married on April 5th, 1961, and she died 3 days later.
Oh. Wow.
So I just thought that that was an interesting tale that deserved to be told.
I did not see that ending coming. Wow.
But yeah, so... Walburga Osterreich and her attic lover.
Wow.
But yeah, so I just thought... But if I was the husband, I'd think that there's something hinky going on. Like, if I'm hearing things and, like, seeing shadows and...
Yeah, I mean, I would be like, okay, so the house is haunted. And then I would move. And then I'd be like, okay, I'm haunted.
And then you die.
Or something I am wearing is haunted. Or something I recently bought and put in my house is haunted.
Well,
something
I'm sure
is fucking
that she
happening.
She was, like, encouraging that.
Oh, probably. Yeah.
Yeah. But yeah. So
oh, my God.
Her name was Walburga.
Hello, Dolly.
But yikes. Yeah, so I have the whole article here, and it was...
that's crazy.
Yeah.
Wow.
I don't know what kind of, like, magic she was working to, like, have that many men just, like...
Yeah. Yeah.
But...
It must have really been, hello, like, she must have been a looker.
Yeah. She wasn't, though. Look at her face.
Oh, I don't know. I mean, I don't think that she's Bert... The werewolf baby.
True.
I mean, she appears to be fair complected with a strong nose. I don't think that there's anything.
Yeah.
I mean, she's a nutter. Or she was a nutter.
Maybe that's why I'm just like, I just look at her and I'm like.
Right. Well, at first I thought that there was going to be like some psycho shit going on with like Norman keeping his mother desiccated in a fucking rocking chair. Or
well,
something.
I think there was enough psycho shit going on with her keeping a 17-year-old kid locked in her attic for 20 fucking years.
Yes.
Through 3 different houses.
Yes. I mean, that was insane.
Well,
I'm
she has multiple
debating.
Other lovers. And moves across the country.
Yeah. Well, I guess that's proof that as you get older, your libido picks up and you need more lovers and a bigger attic. I don't know.
And a really good bathtub.
And a really good bathtub.
For
and some good soundproofing. Yeah.
So wow. I just saw that and I was like, that deserves to be discussed.
That's some crazy shit.
Yeah, but I thought it was interesting that like she lives all that, and then she just dies straight like right after the wedding.
Yeah. Just like that, huh? Nice. Alright. Oh God. So let's see. I'm trying to think if we have anything, to clue up this week. Anything new on the Instagram front?
No, when I checked earlier today, though, we had 14.
Okay.
Subscribers right. here. I can check right now. We'll see if it's, because I did actually check today.
Yeah, if you guys are interested, we do have an Insta. It's Blood Marmalade.
Ooh, 16.
So, oh, we're up to 16.
Ooh.
Well, I mean, one of them is you, but still.
Stop telling people that.
15. Still good. I should probably join, because then.
Oh,
we'll have
one.
Yeah. I mean, that's kind of lame, but whatever. It's like, I'm going to have a birthday party and invite everybody, and then nobody shows up.
But I'm still here. All the cake is
right.
for me.
Which is fine. I like cake.
I don't.
I'm okay with that.
I'm more of a pie person.
I mean, I like pie, too.
I prefer pie. It's more moist.
I don't, yeah, you know, I don't discriminate. I don't discriminate against any dessert.
I have a friend, and she likes chocolate cake, and I like apple pie, so she calls me Choke, and I call her AB.
Huh? Nice.
Yeah. Isn't that a beautiful story?
It is.
Needed to be told.
All right. So on that note, thank you guys so much for listening. We really appreciate you guys tuning in. To see what shenanigans we're up to.
Shout out again to Susan.
Shout out again to Susan.
Let us know how the hell you found us.
Sue, if your friends call you Sue. Otherwise, Susan. thank you for listening. Again, we appreciate that you are, and yeah, that everybody
if anyone
is.
Else, comment on our Facebook page. You could get a shout out.
Yeah, there you go. Episode. I mean, that it's
if
all you.
Also Susan, then that's just like a double bonus.
I mean, if your name was also Susan and you commute to Dallas every day, then this one is for you too.
Yeah.
Just pretend. Just pretend that's the way that it is. Yeah, and if you're a boy named Sue, then maybe you also commute to Dallas. I don't know.
Yeah, maybe.
And yeah, this one's for you too. So, all right.
For you cool. too, the band.
For you too, the band. Yes. All right, guys. So we will see you next time. Take care.
Sorry. And cool, teddy bear.
All right, guys. And as always, stay spooky. Hungry? You forgot what you normally say?
Wow.
St. James Infirmary. You know, I saw my baby there. Oh, she was stretched out on